Noah Gattel, welcome to the Bookshelf Conversations.
Thank you, Ron. Thanks for having me.
I was very excited to see this book announced because it combines two of my favorite topics, baseball and movies. So anytime I can find a baseball movie, I will watch it no matter how bad it gets reviewed or and certainly most of the movies included in your book are among my favorites. There are a couple that I absolutely abhor. But how did this idea come about?
Well, I'm like you. I love baseball movies. I always have. When I was growing up in the mid 1980s, we were in the middle of this incredible baseball movie boom, and I didn't know at the time that it wasn't normal for two or three very good baseball movies to come out every year. But as a young fan, I think those movies really supported my burgeoning interest in the game, because when you watch the game as a kid or even as an adult on TV or in person, it's a beautiful game, but you don't know who these people are. You don't know what their fears are and their dreams are and their anxieties are and what their perversions are. And the movies really showed me all of that. They really filled out the picture of what baseball is and who baseball players are. And for a young fan, that was just so valuable. And I think that's part of what hooked me. So, like, in a way, the baseball movies were important, as important as the baseball itself. And I never saw a book that really validated that. There were a couple of baseball movie books out there. There were a couple about single films, but no sort of overview. And as I looked at that, I'm like, I don't want to just do an encyclopedia. I want to do something that tells a story as well. And to me, the most interesting story about the baseball movie is how it's evolved over the years and how the changes in the baseball movie invariably reflect what was happening in the country at the time the movies were made. And that's probably true of any genre, right? Like, you could write a similar book about horror movies or Westerns, certainly. But to me, the baseball movie was a really interesting test case because it is the national pastime. And so many of these films deal in explicitly patriotic themes. So that was the angle I took. That was the way I sort of made it unique. But the real joy in writing this book for me was just revisiting these films over and over again and delving into them and getting to talk to some of the people who made them. And it was really a pleasure.
One thing that I just thought of is some would say that movies are the national pastime,
Yeah.
so it's quite
It's the
funny.
collision of two national pastimes. That's the way I put it somewhere. And that makes it a very unique case.
The book follows more or less the chronological order. It begins with the Pride of the Yankees and the Stratton story, which are both among my favorites. Certainly the way, and you talk about this quite well, the way the movies are made, the thought behind why they're being made varies from decade to decade. Back in those days, they were heroic stories, because that's what the country needed at the time. It is gradually transformed into you have movies like Eight Men Out and The Natural, and other movies that involve gambling and the downfall, if you will, of the players. Talk a little bit. The thing I'm really interested in The Natural because of the way it changes from the way the book was written. So talk about that a little bit.
Sure. I mean, I think the book The Natural by Bernard Malamud, it's one of the best novels I've ever read. It's an exquisitely written book, and he is one of the 20th century's great writers. I mean, there's an award named after him, a very prominent award. That's how good he is. But famously, that book ends with Roy Hobbs striking out. There's a subplot about him taking money from gamblers, and he's paid to strike out. But at the end, he decides, I'm going to go for it anyway, basically. And he still strikes out. And it's a great book about failure. I mean, baseball is, as is often said, is a game of failure. And I think The Natural, the book, really captures that. But in 1984, the country was not in the mood for failure. This was Reagan's America when he was pitching the country on a more optimistic vision, a more nostalgic vision that things could go back to the way that they were. And The Natural is a very nostalgic film. It is a film that revels in all those period details. It revels in this idea of returning to the land, returning to a rural area where he grew up and where he ends up in the movie, returning to those values and sort of getting away from the sin and excess of the big city. And there's some other baseball movies about that as well. And of course, the way that it really conveys that optimism is in its final moments when, instead of striking out, Roy Hobbs hits this home run despite this wound in his gut from his old mistakes, from his young self who made mistakes in the big city. He still hits this home run and wins the game. And there's this beautiful shot and beautiful music. And it's truly one of the most rousing moments in a baseball movie ever, or maybe in any movie ever. And it really fits much more with the spirit of the time in which it was made than Malamud's ending would have. The 1980s were not a time when movies had sad endings or realistic endings. The 1970s, maybe, but not the 1980s. So that version of the movie could never have been made in 1984.
I'm going to jump back and forth a little because that's the way my mind works. Talk a little bit about the differences in your chapter about A League of Their Own. You write about how some of the women were not convincing as athletes and how that was a bit of a double standard. And then you talk about in earlier chapters, you talk about the Babe Ruth story and Fear Strikes Out, which featured two actors who were demonstrably terrible at indicating any kind of athletic prowess at all. So you talk about nowadays, you couldn't get away with that. You couldn't have a baseball movie with someone who was as unathletic as William Bendix or Tony Perkins.
I mean, let me clarify it first. Like, I think the women actors in League of Their Own did a really good job, especially that the tryout scene at Wrigley Field. I think there's some really good baseball on display in that scene. I think the point I was trying to make in the book is that when they were casting A League of Their Own, they sort of started with the athleticism and like they held a big tryout, like just to see if these people could play before they really considered their acting ability. Whereas in male-driven baseball movies, they get an actor and they're like, "Well, we'll figure out whether he can play later. We'll train him up. It'll be fine." But there was a double standard there, I think, in that women had to like prove they could play, and then we could see if they could actually do the role. But yeah, things did change in terms of our expectations in the 40s and 50s. It maybe because we were just getting used to baseball on TV and seeing it in close-up. But the expectation that actors could really approximate the look and performance of a professional athlete was just not there. I think Pride of the Yankees is a great example of this. Gary Cooper was chosen to play the role of Lou Gehrig, one of the best baseball players of his era or of all time. And he didn't know anything about baseball. He had never played it as a child. He grew up partially in England, that was part of it. He wasn't the right-handedness. He was a righty and not a lefty, and he really just knew nothing. And they tried to train him up as best they could, but in the end, they had to resort to a lot of tricks. You know, they had to switch the film around so it looked like he was batting lefty, which meant he had to run to third base instead of first base, and they had the number in his uniform backwards. They resorted to all this gimmickry to make up for the fact that he didn't know the game at all, and that did go on for a long time in baseball movies, although Jimmy Stewart in the Stratton story really does know what he's doing. And I love how in the first shot of that movie, you see him throw a pitch from the mound, get the ball back from the catcher, turn around to face the camera, and then throw another pitch. It's like they're saying, "We want you to know Jimmy Stewart is really doing this on his own. We're not using any tricks here." And that almost seemed like a response to the Pride of the Yankees to me, which I thought was really cool. But then when you do get to the 80s, I think things changed a lot. Robert Redford had a really nice swing, and you know, he didn't look like he was 19, so I wouldn't say he was realistic as a baseball player in some of those scenes, but he had a great swing. And then Kevin Costner and Bull Durham really changed the game for everybody. When he was trying to get that role of Crash Davis, he took Ron Shelton, the director, out to the batting cages to show him that he could cut it. And when I watched that movie, when I saw it as a kid, even before I really knew anything, I just sensed that this was a person who looked right on a baseball field, looked right doing all the things a baseball player has to do. And from that point on, I think it became a prerequisite that the actors had to be able to pass muster as ball players. And I think part of it is just due to changing standards. Like once Robert Redford set the standard, it had to be met. But I do think there's something to this point that all these directors in the 80s, they did grow up watching the game on TV. They were the first generation of filmmakers who grew up that way. And I do think there was a greater need for verisimilitude because they were used to the visual elements of the game. And they just felt in their hearts it had to look the way that it looked to them on TV. And once you meet create that standard, I think every film afterwards basically had to meet it, or we would cry foul. I mean, people love pointing out mistakes in sports movies and baseball movies. And if the lead actor doesn't look like he can really play, he or she can really play, that's considered an unforgivable error.
At this point, I just quickly want to mention Richard Sandomir's excellent book on the making of The Pride of the Yankees, and also where you still have a Kevin Costner in Bull Durham, you had Tim Robbins, who you note was not among the most realistic of athletes.
No, he certainly wasn't. And there's a lot of stories from the people who were there at the making of the film, particularly from like the Durham Bulls groundskeeping crew, who they were not shy about voicing their opinion about how bad he was and how he actually did hit the mascot in one scene. And then they decided to put that into the movie. But I think they did an interesting thing with him, which is they gave him this crazy windup that looks like Louis Tiant or Fernando Valenzuela. And that sort of distracts you a little bit from noticing how bad he is, because it's such a strange abstract motion that you don't have a lot to compare it to, and it doesn't really stand out how for how terrible it was. And I think that was a really smart move by the filmmakers.
And now I'll mention Ron Shelton's book about the Church of Baseball, which is about the making of Bull Durham. And I don't remember him mentioning that particularly, but I know he was constantly updating the script. So I'm guessing that when they filmed that, they said, let's just add it in there. Naturally, you couldn't include every baseball movie, but some of the ones that come to mind, you do talk about the 1940s version of the Babe Ruth story, but you don't talk about the Babe, which is another one where you have John Goodman portraying Babe Ruth, and of course he was like way too heavy to depict him as a young man. To talk about your selection process, about what you wanted to include and what you left out.
Yeah, it's funny. Babe Ruth was not that heavy by today's standards. He was probably like average, but back then it was part of his legend that he was this voracious eater and drinker, and that he was enormous. So John Goodman fit the bill, I guess, in that regard. But yeah, the idea was I wanted to tell this story of America. You know, I look at this as a cultural history as much as a baseball book. It tells the story of America, it tells the story of baseball, and it tells the story of Hollywood through these films. So that was how I made my selections. Did I occasionally have to stretch a little bit to include a movie that I thought was super important? Yeah, I did, because I know you can't write a book called Baseball the Movie and not include certain baseball movies. I had to make sure all of the films in the canon got in there. Now, hardcore baseball fans like you and me, we may have our favorites that did not get a full chapter or half a chapter. But I think for the average fan, they will see all the movies that they would expect to see in a book called Baseball the Movie. But then I also did some stuff, because there were movies I wanted to include, but I just couldn't quite fit them into the narrative. So I included these interludes. For example, there's a chapter on The Naked Gun. There's a chapter, top 10 baseball scenes in non-baseball movies.
Let
And
me
that
just
was a
interrupt you for 1 minute because I want to talk about The Naked Gun. And
great.
you ask, is this a baseball movie? I would say no. It is a movie that includes baseball, as in some of your other chapters talk
Yeah.
about little bits of baseball falling in to, you know, they go to a baseball game or they play catch or something. But I would say that The Naked Gun is not a baseball movie.
I agree with you, Ron, but I thought it was really close, and I'll tell you why. I don't want to spoil that part of the book too much, but there's like 25 solid minutes of baseball scenes in that movie. They all come in one chunk. The first two-thirds of the movie don't have any baseball, which definitely is a ding against it. But the people who made it clearly really love baseball. It's hard to satirize something that you don't love. And I could tell by some of the jokes that like they knew their stuff. They knew baseball and they loved baseball. And I really appreciated that about the Naked Gun. I also appreciated the way it's centered the umpire, who in most baseball movies is a marginal figure at best. Usually we hate the umpire in life and in movies. But the Naked Gun tapped into this thing, which, when I was a kid, I knew I was never going to play in the major leagues. I didn't really even have that as a fantasy. But I sometimes thought, well, maybe I could make it there as an umpire, because that's another way to kind of be in the game if you're not good enough to play. And that movie sort of taps into that fantasy a little bit of like, what would it be to be an umpire? What would my strike call? What would my strikeout call be? Wouldn't it be fun to dust off home plate and go check the pitcher for sandpaper? And I feel like Naked Gun is the only movie really in baseball movie history that even engages with that idea. So I definitely wanted to write about it, but I agree with you. In the end, it's not a baseball movie. It's a spoof of LA cop movies that also has some baseball in it.
Another trope of baseball movies throughout the years has been the down on his luck scout who just happens upon a star player. It happened in the Stratton story.
Yeah,
It
great
happened
example.
in The Natural. It happens in, and there are movies simply about scouts,
The
the scout.
scout. Yeah.
And I forget the Well, that was the one with Albert Brooks, right? The Scout. What was the one with James Olmos, Edward James
Oh,
Olmos?
talent for the game.
Okay, so and of course, Trouble with the Curve, and Moneyball are all about scouts, but the last two are not don't really fall into that cliche of like, oh, I found this guy, and yeah, I've been drinking, but I'm fine now. And the fact that Frank Morgan was able to join the team as an accompanying Monty Stratton and Jimmy Stewart. And again, an aside, Jimmy Stewart strikes me as the Kevin Costner of his generation because he appeared in the Stratton story. There was a Strategic Air Command where he was an also a third baseman who was called back into duty. Am I missing one? Was there a third?
No, I think that's it. And of course, in
Okay.
Strategic Air Command, it's only a scene of him, one scene
Right.
on the baseball field.
Right.
Gary Cooper did probably the Yankees. He also played a ball player in Meet John Doe, where we don't actually
Right.
see him ever playing baseball, but it is
Right.
commented on how he was a baseball player. So I feel like
Right.
those two are sort of neck and neck for the baseball movie crown back then.
But like you say, Stewart at least could look like he could
Yeah,
throw the ball.
absolutely.
Talk about again, getting back to the double standards in your chapter on A League of Their Own, you talk about how Marla Hooch, the unattractive player in a league that was built around attractive women, was able to marry and leave the team, but Dottie could not leave the team even though her husband came back from the war.
Yeah, I think this movie is really mean to Marla Hooch. And it's okay for comedy to be mean sometimes, but this is a movie that is all about, revising the way sports movies and movies in general have portrayed women. It's giving these women their movie, their moment in the sun. It takes their plight seriously. It advocates for them, except in the case of Marla Hooch. Now, this movie makes fun of Marla Hooch from the first moment we see her, that they frame her as being very unattractive. And the fact that she falls in love and gets married and leaves the team, they portray that like it's okay that she abandoned her team because she is so unattractive, so homely, that we should all just be so thankful she found somebody who would marry her.
But
Meanwhile,
yet she was a great player.
she was a great player, and as her father says in the opening scene, she loves to play. And yet the movie takes that away from her in a weird way. She abandons the team when they need it most. I mean, maybe the World Series would never have even gotten to seven games if Marla Hooch was on the team. She was their best hitter. And the movie, like, it's in a way, it's nice that it forgives her for that. But I think there's another way to read it, which is like it's very condescending. It's patronizing of them to say, yeah, she loved baseball, but it's more important that she find a husband and get married. Gina Davis, on the other hand, the beautiful, statuesque Gina Davis, she's going to leave the team on the eve of the final game of the or the eve of the World Series. And the film frowns on that, but not for the same reason, not because she's so lucky to have found a husband. Her plight is actually very well drawn, I think, that she's genuinely torn between, the old values and the new values, being a housewife and a mother, or being a baseball player. And it affords her far more respect than it does Marla Hooch. It's a real chink in the armor of what is, I think, an otherwise really strong feminist movie. And it bums me out when I see it.
Let's talk about kids, because baseball is a game for kids. And I found, talk about the difference, and I know it's a whole different generation, a different era, between the Bad News Bears and the Sandlot.
Oh boy. Well, one of them is great and one of them isn't, in my opinion. But I think the Bad News Bears is one of the best baseball movies ever made, because it has something interesting to say about the time that it was made. I mean, this is what I look for in a baseball movie. It is a character-driven story in a lot of ways. I think the character of Morris Buttermaker is really well drawn, really rich. You learn so much about him from just a few lines. This line, he tells the kids, this quitting thing is a hard thing to stop once you start it. And boy, doesn't that tell you everything about how he got to where he is in his life? So I think that's great. It's a really funny movie, but what makes it interesting to me, beyond, kids getting hit in the nuts with baseballs and shoving chocolate bars in their face, is that it's a movie about the kids, but in a way, the real subject of the movie is the adults. The adults are really interesting in the Bad News Bears. You have Morris Buttermaker, who's not a great guy, but becomes a good guy over the course of it, learns to be selfless, learns to put the kids first. But then you have the parents, who are far worse than Morris Buttermaker. The coach of the Yankees slaps his kid around on the field and puts winning first at all costs. We'd never seen that in a kid's movie before, an adult who behaved that way. It became kind of standard for kids' sports movies that there was always one coach who was domineering and he was the evil coach. But this was the first time we'd seen anything like that. And the father of one of the Bears, the ones who set up the team, the city councilman Whitewood, he's in a way even worse because he claims that he cares about the kids and all he wants is for them to play. But when they lose their first game, he's so embarrassed he wants to disband the team. So this is a movie in which the adults are really like not great people. And for a kids' movie, that's a really subversive thing to do. And to me, it really captures the mood of its era, the disillusionment of the 1970s when everybody had lost faith in their government. And to kids, the parents are the government. So in a way, that they're sort of a stand-in for everything else that was going on at the time. It's a movie that really wrestles with its era. Whereas The Sandlot, in my opinion, it doesn't really wrestle with anything. I think of that movie as a pure shot of nostalgia. It is made by a person who went on the record and said, this is the way I wish my childhood had been. It was sort of like this, but the movie is more like what I wanted it to be than it actually was. And for me, nostalgia is a really dangerous thing. It's a big part of baseball, obviously. Baseball's been a nostalgic sport since the beginning. Even like it's the first time baseball was played in a city, it was a nostalgic sport because it called back to our, agrarian roots as Americans and as people. But I think it can be a pernicious idea. And The Sandlot bums me out in a lot of ways because its nostalgia is so overpowering that it abdicates some opportunities to say interesting things and tell interesting stories. And I'll give you one example. The James Earl Jones stuff at the end, I think, is really weird because they meet this player who says that he used to play with Babe Ruth and he would have broken all of his records if he hadn't gone blind. That's an erasure of the Negro Leagues because James Earl Jones, that character who was probably in his 60s in 1962, would have been playing at a time when segregation was the law of the land in baseball. And yet the movie just completely refuses to acknowledge that. It puts forth this fantasy that he could have played alongside Babe Ruth. And it even shows you a picture of him standing next to Babe Ruth, which is actually James Earl Jones's head superimposed onto Jimmy Fox's body. And to me, this is a movie that does some interesting things racially, like putting a Latino player and a Black player on the team and having the Latino player being the best one of all the kids in the Sandlot in 1993. That was pretty forward thinking, actually. But then it has this great opportunity to put a little reality, just a tiny bit of reality into this vision of nostalgia, and it completely glosses over it. And I think that's, To me, it's actually irresponsible. I understand it's a kids' movie and people are having fun with it, but kids learn stuff from movies. And that movie was so committed to its nostalgia, so committed to not wrestling with anything serious, that it actually makes it less interesting of a movie to me.
I want to go back to you're talking about Buttermaker as the
Yeah.
coach of the Bad News Bears. That seems to be another trope of a lot of baseball movies. A down on his luck or a disgraced ball player who committed some, drunk driving offense or some
Yeah.
gambling offense and is sentenced to community service and winds up coaching a team. Hardball immediately comes
Yeah.
to mind. There's a movie which I don't think you included called The Yankles.
Yeah, I know the ankles.
Okay, The Yankles, where a former player who I believe was accused of gambling is sentenced. That is one of my all-time most horrible baseball movies because it's so stereotyped
Yeah.
that I
It's
just.
it's a big trend in this subgenre that I call faith-based baseball movies. And the Yankles technically falls into that category because it's a film about Orthodox Jewish players in a yeshiva. But most of these movies are about Christian people and they're made for evangelical audiences. And many of those movies use this trope of a former player who's disgraced. Usually he's an alcoholic or something, who either gets sentenced to coach a team or he has to move back to his hometown or something and he gets roped into it. And that's how they find their redemption. And in a way, it harkens back to the post-war baseball movies, where characters like Lou Gehrig or Monty Stratton or Grover Cleveland Alexander, for example, are afflicted with something, whether it's alcoholism in the case of Alexander or an amputated leg, Monty Stratton. And baseball is sort of the way that they overcome it. It's a vehicle for them to get over their issues, clean their life up, clean their minds up, clean their hearts up. And baseball helps them do that. So these faith-based movies, which they all take a page from Morris Buttermaker in a way, they sort of bring the baseball movie full circle in a sense. They're very wholesome movies about people overcoming their problems. What's interesting to me is that while those movies were mainstream studio movies in the 40s, now over the past 15 years, when all these faith-based baseball films have been made, they've sort of been relegated to evangelical streaming services like PureFlix or, Walmart and Target in the heartland. The values of what we want in a baseball movie have changed so much in that time.
I haven't made a habit out of watching that type of movie, but I do remember seeing, is it Milltown Pride?
Yeah.
Okay, and you talk about how the poor production values
Yeah.
of that particular movie, which I totally agree with. As we wind down, I want to talk about the business side of the book. Did you have trouble finding a publisher for something like this? Because baseball movies in themselves, they don't do, relatively speaking, that great at the box
Yeah.
office. So
Yeah.
what, a hard sell?
It was. Yeah, it was. I found one agent who was interested, and we got offers from two publishers. And the publisher we went with is not one of the major publishers. It's a sports publisher in house called Triumph Books, and they've published a lot of cool stuff actually,
Ooh.
and they did a great job with this. But it was a difficult sell actually. And but my argument was like, this book may not sell 100,000 copies, but there are people out there who want this book, who've been waiting for a book like this. They may not agree with all my opinions, but when they see the title Baseball the Movie and they see Robert Redford and Geena Davis on the cover of it, they're going to be very excited and say, finally, someone made a book just for me. And that has been my experience. I've been out on the road with this book. I've been doing a lot of interviews like this one. And it's really clear there are people for whom the baseball movie really matters. And that's why I wrote this book, is because it matters to me. And I wanted a book to be out there that validated my silly, crazy passion for these movies. And I hope it's done that for others as well.
So, would you call yourself a baseball fan who loves movies or a movie fan who loves baseball?
Think I'm a baseball fan first. I certainly fell in love with baseball before I fell in love with movies. But I'm a Mets fan, so it's never easy. There are periods of the
Hear you,
summer when
brother.
I'm like, I can't watch the game that I'm going to throw on a movie.
And we have been talking with Noah Gittel, author of this great new book, Baseball the Movie, highly recommended. Noah, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Ron. This was a lot of fun.